distracted by the device in my hand. It does nothing except for... Good morning, everyone. I should have thought ahead. Pockets would have been really good. I can do that. But good morning, everybody. Are we awake yet? We just had a really awesome morning conversation. We're going to continue that. That's our goal. My name is Courtney Speckman. I'm the Education Programs Manager at the White House Hispanic Association. How do you approach the history of the White House at your site? Feel free, if you have a thought or two, to jot it down on those lovely white note cards there on your chairs. Don't feel like you have to, but they're there for you.
You need a pen also. Anyone needs a pen or a pencil, let me know. I have extras.
You can use your phones. You can use whatever technology.
You will also get to the bookmarks on your seats later as well. So.
Great.
Yes. Yeah, I'll do one more right here. All right. Well, we'd love to hear more from you, and we definitely will later, but we do, you know,
we'll
come back to this at the end. But just from the few examples that we've heard, and I'm sure the ones you've thought of as well, there are many ways you can talk about the White House when you talk about the presidency. And some of the ways the association approaches this topic is through kind of five different lenses. We talk about the park, the White House neighborhood, the influence the house has had on the surrounding area, and the influence the area has had on the house. We look at it as a stage for ceremonies, as state events, also as a home where families lived and grew and children grew up and really became a home for these families who were living there. Also as an office where the president was making important decisions and where these political happenings were unfolding. And then finally, as a museum, it has an amazing collection. And so that's one of our focuses as well. And looking at these kind of five different lenses is something that we at the White House Historical Association have been doing for over 50 years now.
And getting into that 50 year, we actually celebrated our 50th anniversary in 2011. We were founded in 1961 as a part of Mrs. Kennedy's three initiatives as soon as she entered the White House. One was to acquire a collection of fine and decorative arts. The other was to restore and preserve the home and the public rooms. And the third was to develop a nonprofit society or association that would be able to procure private funding to do all of these things, and so it wouldn't have to go through the government funding and constituent tax dollars. So how do you generate those monies? In 1962, the first edition of the White House Guidebook, which is what we kind of call it in the short answer, but it's the White House and Historic Guide, was published. And today, it's in its 23rd edition. Our 50th anniversary edition was released in 2011, and over 10 million copies have been published. So it's by far our most important and widely seen and used resource that we publish. In 1981, we also introduced a new aspect of things that we generate for revenue causes that go into preserving the White House, and that's our annual Christmas ornament, which we began with George Washington, and we've done successive presidents since then and also marked commemorative occasions and celebrations, including the 200th anniversary of the presidency and the 200th anniversary of the White House being built itself. We also do other publications as well. And we've also established through the years, during the Bush administration and the Clinton administration, the White House Endowment Fund, which is essentially an endowment for the collection itself, and the White House Acquisition Fund. And that's a specific fund just for acquiring pieces of art, fine art and decorative art for the White House collection. So in 2014, we're still doing great things and still continually trying to evolve and be current and be present in how you all use the White House history. And that's also why in 2010 we entered into the co-stewardship with the National Trust to develop the National Center for White House History.
And there it is. So top middle picture, this is historic Decatur House. It's owned by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It was actually it has the distinction of being the first and last privately owned home on Lafayette Square in the White House neighborhood. It was built for Stephen Decatur, Commodore Decatur, right after the War of 1812. It was started in 1818. Unfortunately, he only lived there for about 14 months before he was shot and killed in a duel. And then after his death, the house was rented to a number of ambassadors, secretaries of state, including Henry Clay, Martin Van Buren, and Henry Livingston, And then it was then sold to John Gadsby. After John Gadsby's death, again, it was rented to a slew of politicians. Vice President George Dallas lived there, and many other people, until it was eventually sold to the Beale family. The Beale family owned the house a little bit after the Civil War, in the 1870s, until 1956. And that's when Marie Beale died and left the house to the National Trust in her will. ensuring that it would remain a historic house and a house that could be used as a museum as well. So it is a really, really important house. And in 2007, the White House Historical Association approached the National Trust to build a program, an education program, together in collaboration. And this was called Paths to Freedom. You can see in the top left picture, it's one of the earlier pictures of our school program that we did together as kind of a pilot to bring students into the space. The White House Historical Association, our offices are actually these two townhouses next door. So they attach, they're connected. But before 2007, 2008, we had no public space. We had no large space to host any events or have anything of our own, which is why we started a series of in-school programs. And today we still have 5 in-school programs for students in grades kindergarten through 6th grade. We visit 6 school districts in the counties in D.C. and in the surrounding areas in Maryland and Virginia. But this partnership with the National Trust was really our first opportunity to have a field trip program where people are coming to us. You know, we don't have access to the White House. We can't bring people inside. So this was a really great opportunity for both organizations. And this partnership is what led to the co-stewardship agreement that Leslie mentioned. In 2010, we entered an agreement where it's still owned by the National Trust, but completely managed by the White House Historical Association. So all the staff is White House Historical Association. We take care of the property. We manage the property. In fact, just a month after we signed this agreement, we had a terrible snowstorm and had to do some emergency roof repair. So we're learning those challenges as we go along because we've never managed property before. So especially an almost 200-year-old historic house. So we did do a series of over about 3 years of preservation, restoration work that the National Trust could not afford to do. We did fix the roof. And this structure, this white building, this is the house. This white building is one of the only remaining slave quarters in D.C. So we also are now interpreting this space. This is the inside, during some of the work that was done. We actually undertook one of the first historic structures reports of this space. We are studying the original architecture of what's left. Unfortunately, there's not a lot. And we did receive two huge grants, I guess. The one is in, what would you call, Rubenstein. It's not really a grant, it's more of a...
More so, David M. Rubenstein, who's a great Washington, D.C. philanthropist, whose name is quite popular around town, gave us $10 million to establish the National Center for White House History. Which is why David Rubenstein's name is on the National Center for White House History. He was very integral in the Reagan administration. Mm-hmm. So he is a lover of history, a lover of the White House, and it was a perfect fit for his goals and ours.
So he gave us the lead gift to help us with some of this restoration, but we also did receive $1 million gift from American Express in a grant, and Michelle Obama graciously came to our carriage house to announce the grant from American Express. So, lots of work being done. The work was finished about a year ago, or a little over a year ago now, and this has really given us that opportunity to expand our programs beyond just one field trip school program. So we will continue to expand that. We're going to talk about some of those things that we have been doing in a little bit. Here are some pictures of our in-school programs, which is where we started, bringing the White House into the classroom. It's something that we still do to this day. It's on 5 different themes that also relate to those themes of the White House. On the top, teaching a group of kindergarten students about first kids in the White House. The White House is a home. The students get to see real pictures of first kids and then reenact and act out different scenes of things that took place. So I'm sitting in front of a huge backdrop of the China Room, and we see a picture of Amy Carter carving pumpkins in the China Room, and then we have some fake pumpkins that they get to reenact that scene. At the bottom left corner, this is our executive detectives program, where we focus on American symbols in the White House. And students get to be detectives. They use magnifying glasses, and they search for American symbols in art and architecture and furnishings in the White House collection. For older students,
We have programs on the jobs of the president, the roles of the president, the Civil War White House, and we have an older version of the art program that shows how the art in the collection reflects American history. So those are the five in-school programs that we've been doing since 2007, well, 2006, right around the time that I started. And then these two pictures reflect our Paths to Freedom program, which is the first program that we started in 2008. This is really a new idea of a different type of education program, with something that we've been really excited about. The students, we focused on the theme of the Emancipation Proclamation. Part of that was connecting the history of Decatur House to the history of the White House, and we thought slavery was a really great bridge and connection between the two sites. So that's where we started. But the students actually get to reenact those events through a play. Each student gets a character, and they get to perform a play in costume. You can see President Lincoln signing the Emancipation Proclamation on the top right, and we actually will film the play and send the DVD back to the schools at the end of the time together. And we'll talk about a few, well, we'll get to this too. Our students and our teachers are the most important audience, obviously, our only audience for these programs. And what do we know about teachers?
They're busy.
we also know, other than that they're busy, that it's really hard for them to take field trips unless they can prove to their higher administration, superintendents, that these do meet standards. So we try to make it as easy as possible for them. We create pre-visit materials that include lists of all the standards that these programs cover. It includes a ready-to-go pre-visit lesson plan that they can use in the classroom to prepare their students for the program. And they are all designed to meet our standards. So in D.C., where we are, we're in a little bit different because we have to meet Virginia, D.C., Maryland, but also national standards. And as you can tell from where we started, we really grew our local audience, but we still have yet to expand into a national audience. And that's something that we're really trying to do. So we can keep moving on to how we've expanded.
Yeah, so as our restoration preservation efforts came to a close, we had an opportunity to pilot two new programs in the 2011-2013 school year. This was a way to meet new audiences in our area and visiting school groups by offering different topics and also expanding the grade levels that we have programs for. Paths to Freedom was geared for grades 4 through 6. We now have programs for grades 3 through 12. So we piloted Forged by Fire, Dolly Madison, the White House, and the War of 1812, just in time for the bicentennial of the War of 1812. And then African Americans in the White House neighborhood, which really was our first program devoted to the slave quarters at Decatur House. So I'd like to tell you a little bit more about these two programs. Excuse me. So with Forged by Fire, our War of 1812 program, one of the main challenges, how do you get kids excited about the War of 1812, this often forgotten about and misunderstood war? So we decided to follow in the path of our Paths to Freedom program, creating a theater program that really brought these characters to life. Because when you look at the story of the White House during the War of 1812, there are a lot of things you can explore. Dolly Madison as a first lady and as this amazing hostess, the decisions Madison and his war council had to make, and of course that famed flight from the White House before the British came to burn it down. So just in that story, there's a lot of drama that makes it perfect for a play. This also helped us reach out to schools in the Maryland area, especially as they are particularly excited about the bicentennial of the War of 1812, for good reason. For good reason. So Forged by Fire follows the similar lineup as Paths does. Each student receives a character. They get the lines, the bio of their character ahead of the time. The teachers get a script to use. So everyone should be able to have a speaking role when they perform their play. As Courtney mentioned, we want to make it as easy as possible for teachers to come to us, and we do that by providing pre-visit resource packets, which have everything the teachers need to come to us and everything the students need to be prepared. However, we understand the school day can be very busy, and so we're also prepared if the students come to us and have never seen the lines before. They're not expected to be memorized. We have cue cards available for them to use. The program also has a smart board component where we talk about the themes of the play together, do some acting tips, make sure everyone knows how to do the old watermelon banana in the background so we're not making background noise, and get the kids excited for what we're doing. We also weave in the story of Stephen Decatur, because part of our mission at the National Center for White House History is to bring in that history of Decatur House and its connection to the White House. So we do that through a tour of Decatur House and look at how that house came to be. So one thing we'd like to do is actually share a scene with you guys, if you're up for it.
There are prizes involved.
Prizes involved. So we have two scenes from our play, so we're just going to hand them out in groups. Feel free to look at them if you'd like to try acting them out. Yes. That would be great. If not, that's fine. We just want to give you a chance to see the materials we give to the teachers. So I'll give you...
You just want one set of each bios per row?
Per group. So three groups on that side, three groups on this side. And then we only have three characters
in the scene.
But here are four copies of the script.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll go to the back. Back always gets me
behind. You can be the director if you'd like. Hi, Madison. Did I give you two? No.
I've got
Henry Clay. One second.
Join together.
Okay, you also need, is that? Great, here you go. Here's John.
You're giving us scripts too.
There you go. Okay, if you'd like to join this group, great. All right, we'll do a group here. I'll look at you.
There you go.
Here's a scene to look at. And I'll have some more bios for you guys to take a look at.
I'll bring more back as long as I have extras to share.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yep, that was the other scene.
There's a challenge right there. We do have enough for everybody. I think we have a script.
Unfortunately, we didn't bring the cue cards. They couldn't fit in our carry-on bags. So.
Actually, you're looking at them. We print on these.
You should do that for you guys to look out for that scene. And just like...
Does anybody need a script?
Here are some bios to take a look at to share, just to give you an idea of what
just
the students
give you
are seeing before they come to us.
Compare the information in the bio about the character with what they're saying in the play. We do challenge our students to think about their character and kind of what their perspectives
okay.
are.
You guys can share that bio for the group for this scene.
Well, I'm passing it back. More script.
Is That's it a different a frequently asked question? Script. Frequently asked
There's
question.
Two different.
Will there be a reenactment?
No, I'll take that back. Never
mind. No, we do not endorse pyromania.
Yes. Well, that was one of the biggest questions was how do we create the burning scene on film? Can we actually have kids carting out the like giant portrait of George Washington? And you'll see in a clip we show you, we came up with a creative way to kind of get past that.
We do have a large George Washington, but it stays firmly in place. We don't have students trying to take it down off the wall.
We had dreams of, yeah, coming down and being lightweight enough, but eventually
yeah, hopefully it's
scaled it back a little bit.
We had a question.
Yes, absolutely. So the play is framed actually with Paul Jennings. The play opens in 1865. He's writing his memoir, the first White House memoir, and he's talking about his time at the White House during the War of 1812. So then we do three scenes, one of Dolly Madison in one of her Wednesday night drawing rooms, one of President Madison with his War Council meeting, and one of the flight scene, where Dolly Madison is writing that famous letter to her sister, she's talking with the people, Paul Jennings included, Suki, the enslaved men and women who were at the White House at the time, as well as the gardener and the gentleman from New York who actually came to help cart the portrait off to safety. So we're very clear to show the other roles involved in this story. It wasn't just Dolly Madison taking the portrait off the wall and carting it off. There are a lot of people involved on this fateful night. Well, would anyone like to give us a little read-through of their scene? Do we have some volunteers? You've been volunteered.
Why don't we call them up by a character?
Okay, so yes, if you, let's do John Randolph, Henry Clay, and Dolly Madison. Yes, why don't you guys come on up and please do. This is a theatrical performance.
Don't forget to at White House History.
Okay. So, you want to set the scene for them?
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your characters?
Okay, so I am John Randolph. I'm a Democratic Republican congressman from Virginia. I come from a large slaveholding family in Virginia. I was educated at Princeton and the College of William & Mary. And I do not like the war against the law. I think it's bad, and I'm known for my violent temper. I'm Henry Clay, a Democrat Republican congressman, Speaker of the House during the Madison presidency. Born in Virginia, raised in Kentucky, walks on the beach. I practiced law before entering politics in 1803. In the years leading up to the War of 1812, I became convinced that military action against Great Britain was necessary. I disliked the British for hurting the American economy and for encouraging Native Americans to act against American settlers on the frontier.
Excellent. We also need a Mrs. Madison.
Yes, we've got one right here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great.
So, I'm Dolly Madison.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Parrot. So I can give you the same beginning I give our young actors. Quiet on the set. Yes. Camera rolling in 3, 2, 1, action.
Clay, what was it you were saying in Congress? That the militia of Kentucky could place Canada at your feet? Well, what do you think of now after all these losses?
Mr. Randolph, the surrender of Detroit was bad, but I still believe Canada is a key to victory over Great Britain. The time will come when the American people will be respected throughout the world.
And cut. Let's give them a round of applause. That was great. Thank you so much. So, as As you may have noticed, we've worked in a lot of different details about the War of 1812 just into that one scene, pulling from a lot of primary source documents because we really wanted these historical figures to say things that Henry Clay and John Randolph would have said. We've drawn from details about Dolly Madison at the White House, their accounts of her, how she would carry a book around with her for that very purpose of kind of easing tension. So we've brought in these details, also the detail about the ice cream. She was well known for that oyster-flavored ice cream, to kind of recreate this White House experience. Now, you guys did a fantastic job, but we do want to showcase some of our kids scene, because they've been great.
Not yet?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll wait then.
All right.
My name is Paul Jennings. I was just reflecting on this painting. I'm working on my autobiography, you see, and this painting of George Washington was part of an important event in my life. It all started in June of 1812, when Congress voted to declare war on Great Britain. During the war, I watched the men and women of Washington society come to Mrs. Madison's Wednesday night drawing rooms to talk politics and hear the latest news.
Ladies, I'm so glad that you can make it to my drawing room tonight. You're my greatest allies when it comes to lifting spirits in these uncertain times.
And then one mask knocked on the ear of the mask, and I knew at that moment she was ours. When we boarded the ship, we found 10 Americans impressed and forced to work for the British Navy.
Personally, I have never been able to realize our being in a state of war. There is so little worry of danger in this city.
It's true. I tried to stay composed and spent each day doing the usual things.
Clay, what was that they were saying in Congress? That the militia of Kentucky could place Canterbury? But what do you think now after all these losses?
Mr. Randolph, the surrender at Detroit was bad, but I still believe Canada is the key to victory over Great Britain. The time will come when American name will be respected throughout the world.
Ha, you have made your world. You have finished the ruin of our country.
Mr. President, I think you are overreacting. Why in the world would the British come here? Baltimore is the place. Washington is of little concern to them.
For months I've asked the Army to strengthen defenses around Washington, but you have done nothing, Armstrong. I will not sit and watch as Washington falls into enemy hands. We must do something.
I agree with General Van Ness. There is much at stake if the British invade Washington. The British could overturn our government. Our rights and liberties will be taken away and our property destroyed.
I fear that the British threat is greater than you think. I hear all of your concerns and you have given me much to think about.
Dear sister, my husband left yesterday morning to join General Wilder. The last message I received from him is alarming because he wants me to be ready at a moment's notice to leave the city.
Miss Madison, James Smith has arrived with a message for you.
Clear out, clear out! General Armstrong has ordered a retreat. The British soldiers may enter the city at any moment. You'll need to leave the President's house immediately for your own safety.
We must save all we can. All the important papers, the silver, the belt, and the velvet curtains if we can manage. And now, dear sister, I must leave this house or become a prisoner in it. When I shall write or where I shall be tomorrow, I cannot tell.
When the news of peace arrived, we were crazy with joy. We went to work in Washington. We rebuilt the capital city. And eventually, the painting of George Washington was returned to the White House, where it still hangs today.
They do a fantastic job, and it's always so interesting to see the different things they bring to their characters and the pride they take in kind of acting out these lines. The final play is about 15 to 20 minutes long when we edit it all together, depending on the pacing of that day. And it's a great way to bring this part of our history to life. And you can see from some of our comments from students and teachers that what we wanted to accomplish, having something that was standards-based, really brought history to life, so far has been accomplished. So especially this one quote we got from a teacher, actually being real people had a great influence on them. It helped them to personalize the history instead of hearing about it without realizing that these were real people. So that was one of our goals, is to really bring these people to life.
And what's really interesting is that we're using the spaces of Decatur House in much the way that they were originally used. We're pretending that we're in the blue room, of course, but we're still at a reception. We're still kind of behind the ropes and using the spaces as our set.
So it kind of makes that even more memorable for the students as well.
And we do have some fabulous prizes for our actors today. So thank you again for participating. We appreciate it. Turning our focus now to our other new program, it's called African Americans in the White House Neighborhood, and this one has a different format. We really wanted to bring students into the preserved slave quarters and talk about the enslaved men and women who resided at this house throughout its history. So that, you can see here, we are working with a student group in the slave quarters. And there are a couple different components to this program that I'd like to share with you. One thing that we did in preparing for this program is that this was a new focus for one of our programs, so we actually brought in some representatives from the National Trust for Historic Preservation, pulling on that partnership to give us some best practices and examples of how other national trust sites are talking about and interpreting slavery at their spaces. We really wanted our part-time staff who help us run these programs feel comfortable in talking about an issue that can still be very sensitive today. So through that preparation, our staff were able to ask questions, and we were all able to go over these ideas together to be prepared for our first program. So this is our 7th through 12th grade program, so we put a lot of emphasis on having these students analyze primary source documents, not just in paper object form, but also looking at Decatur House, a historic house, as a primary source document. When the students visit us, we start with a conversation to help them make some connections to their own lives. We ask them, what is a community? Has your community changed over time? And then how? So we get them thinking about these ideas from their own lives. Then we take these concepts and apply it to the White House neighborhood. Today, it's a federal enclave, a national park, but a long time ago, it was a bustling residential neighborhood. So we want to help the students think about the White House in this context. One of the first parts of the program is the house tour of Decatur House. But we do this tour in a different way. We highlight 6 individuals who we know were enslaved by the Gadsbys at Decatur House. And we have them on note cards for the students to look at throughout the tour. We have a little more information on who they are because they are mentioned in the Gadsby heirs' D.C. Emancipation petition, where they petitioned the D.C. government with the Emancipation Act of 1862 to be compensated for freeing the enslaved men and women. This is happening in D.C., and these documents give us a little more information about the roles these men and women had at Decatur House. So as we go through the historic spaces, we're talking about each room from the perspective of these enslaved men and women, talking about what their experiences would have been like in each room, what they would have seen, heard, observed, what they would have been doing in the spaces. We also make sure we want to connect Decatur House to the community around it. So our focus is not just on Decatur House, it's this isolated residence, but what's going on in the D.C. community in the years leading up to the Civil War, the focus of abolitionists on the city, the growing free African-American community in the area, the churches, schools that are being established. So we're making connections to that as well and talking about how urban slavery is different from plantation slavery. These men and women would have had more access to the community around them and seen and heard these conversations. We also when we go into the slave quarters, we ask the students to really explore the space and look for architectural clues, the ones that are remaining that will tell us how many rooms the space was divided into. There are ghost marks and doorways that help you tell that and help figure out what is original to the space, what is new. So they're really looking at what the environment around them. The second component is where we turn the focus to the community of the White House neighborhood. We call it the Create Your Own Exhibit activity, and students get a chance to actually create their own exhibit about one of these 6 individuals who lived and worked in the White House neighborhood in this pre-Civil War era and shortly afterwards. We give them a packet that includes a bio, brief bio of their person, 8 to 10 primary and secondary sources, a graphic organizer that asks them some questions about analyzing their sources and thinking if they're primary or secondary, gets them thinking about what the documents that they're looking at. And then we give them poster board, paper, markers, glue, and tape. And we really give them the responsibility to tell the story of these 6 individuals. We look at John F. Cook, who was His aunt actually sold vegetables in the White House in what would become Lafayette Square and was able to purchase his freedom. He went on to become a school teacher and founder of the first African-American Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C. Charlotte Dupuy, an enslaved woman at Decatur House who actually sued Henry Clay for her freedom while she lived there. Paul Jennings, who we've mentioned before, enslaved at the Madison White House, but went on to become an abolitionist and free man in Washington, D.C. Elizabeth Keckley, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, seamstress and confidant of Mary Todd Lincoln. William Williams, who was actually a coach driver for Millard Fillmore, whose enslaved family members were, he was free, but his enslaved family members were going to be sent back to plantations in New Orleans, and he actually helped raise money from the community in Washington, D.C. to purchase their freedom. And then James Wormley, who kind of rose to become this hotelier in Washington, D.C., and his hotel was near the White House. So to give you an example of what we give the students, I show them the primary sources that we use for Elizabeth Keckley. So you get a mixture of pictures, objects, maps, primary sources that they can use and look over. On the back of each primary source, there's a little bit of context of what everything is, what year it's from, brief description, and there are transcriptions of the text if needed. Then we ask the students to think as exhibit designers and to choose 4 to 5 primary sources to use in their exhibit, to think of an exhibit title and have a label for each object. The responsibility of telling the story is really in their hands, and we've been really excited to see the results. You can see, I know the lighting's not great in these photographs, but you can see the posters that have come out of this project. And the students actually get a chance to present just a 2 to 3 minute presentation, nothing too stressful, but they can tell us a little bit about what they've learned. So it's been really neat to see the objects they've gone with and what they've learned about their person. So with both of our programs, our new programs, it's been really important, and actually really all of our field trip programs, to give the students an opportunity to make choices and to take ownership of this history, whether it's putting on a play and making decisions as characters or creating these exhibits. It's a way for them to connect and kind of personalize what the history that they're learning about. Evaluations have also been a huge part of these two programs, especially the new ones. We were changing things as we would get evaluations from teachers. We send out an electronic evaluation after each program. The teachers send us back feedback, which has been really great and has helped us make our programs even better as we've piloted them. We also talked to our part-time staff. They're the ones who are there every day running these programs, and they've had some great insights from their what they've observed to help us make changes along the way as well. I really think these two ideas, even if they're not a dramatic reenactment, even if it's not done with full costumes or film production, but taking on characters or creating an exhibit out of primary sources are things that can be applied to many different topics of history and something you might even be able to use at your own sites. So those are our two new programs, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about our education endeavors at the National Center. Oh, sure. 7th through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of connections.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
We judge those too.
Yeah. I mean, we're really involved in it at my site, but I was actually thinking about doing that with the younger students, like our 5th through our 6th graders are really a hard age group for us to commit. Mm-hmm. 4th graders and 3rd graders are primary groups that
right.
Are.
Right. Well, I think even with it can be used for grades outside of 7th through 12th, certainly depending on the level of primary sources and the difficulty level. You can certainly do a lot, I think, just scaling that, making sure like the sources they're looking at are grade level or reading level appropriate, and there's, I think, a lot you could do there.
We've had a lot of teachers say that they're using this as well to get their students excited about participating in a project and being involved in History Day as well.
Yeah, History Day is phenomenal. Anything you can tie to it, I think it's really good. And a lot of schools are participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Bob. Sure. I like the idea of providing materials
Right. Yeah, taking it on to the next level.
That would also be a great way to broaden the topic and the context as well. And one of our challenges is interpreting 214 years of White House history. And obviously, where we've started fall into the conversation we had yesterday about commemoration. Obviously, War of 1812 has that connection between Stephen Decatur, Decatur House, and the White House. So our early programs have had that focus because of the resources that we have. And moving forward as a national center, we do need to keep the White House in mind and draw on other stories and other topics. So this, we will be the first to admit this is a good starting point, but still something that we want to expand over time. So going into teacher institutes was another natural progression for us. We have had a partnership with Close Up Foundation for the last 6 years. They bring teachers to DC. Speak up loudly. They do bring teachers to DC and spend about an hour with us. But once our carriage house was completed, it gave us that venue to host our own teacher institutes. So far, we've had three. We did two, actually, in the summer of 2012, which was an ambitious premiere starting off. Each one was 2 days, and they highlighted the themes of our new education programs. It allowed us to introduce these programs to the teachers, to let them know what we're working on. We got to actually pilot and promote some of the materials that we were working on and get their feedback. And then we also invited historians and other authors to lecture and give a little bit more context about the history of both of these topics, which was pretty successful overall. Last year, our topic was Why Teach the White House, and it focused on the themes of the White House. So we brought the curator to come and talk about the White House as a museum, and we were able to focus on how you learn about the White House and where are those resources. Obviously, the biggest challenge, again, is expanding that audience and attendance. And I'm sure some of you have these issues at your sites as well. Millions of visitors. You can see a few empty seats in the top left corner. So over time, we're hoping to find more ways to fill the seats and expand our audience so it's not just local teachers, but actually being a resource for teachers throughout the country, even outside of the country, eventually. This year, we're pretty excited to partner with the National Park Service at President's Park and Octagon House, and we're going to have a week-long teacher institute on the bicentennial of the burning of Washington. So we're going to take the teachers to each one of our sites for a day. We're also going to go to Fort McHenry, and throughout the entire week, we'll be focusing on the story of the burning of Washington. So we're pretty excited. And still growing. Hopefully it'll be at s'mores.
Yeah, s'mores. Yes.
We'll get to the s'mores.
Yeah, we'll get to the s'mores.
So that's our other endeavor to reach out to teachers. We'll talk a little bit about some of our online offerings in a little bit, but this is our start. Beyond teachers, having the space actually not under construction has allowed us to expand our offerings beyond teachers and students for the first time. Anytime we hosted a lecture or program before, has always been hosted at another site. So now we have our own site. This is just going to expand and grow further to bring more and more people to Decatur House, to the National Center. So on the left is an example of a lecture that we held in the brand new Carriage House, which is a modern structure built on the historic site of the Carriage House. And then on the right is a jazz series that we've been doing every summer, Jazz on Jackson Place. Actually, we started by the Trust before we merged, before we became co-stewards, and it's in its 8th season this summer. So we are continuing some of those programs as well. And I'll let Leslie talk a little bit more about our other public programs.
We have our open houses.
I guess I can talk about open. Forgetting about our order. Also to expand the thematic history of the White House,
to a public family audience. We've started a series of open houses at Decatur House, which will become a quarterly event. We've had three so far to date, and they all approach a specific thematic history. So I'll talk about what those themes are. They're all free and open to the public. They offer a chance for the public to actually see the house. We don't have any public tours yet. We don't have any way for people to come in and see the house. So this is why we started the open houses. It's a way to bring people inside, actually learn who we are, what we're doing, trying to get the word out. It's four times a year, so we're not going crazy yet, but we're hoping to expand to that point. They all offer lots of activities that relate to that theme. They talk. We've had historians give talks. We've had musical performances. We had an artist come and give drawing lessons that related to the theme. And then we've also been able to partner with people in the community, businesses in the community. They've donated refreshments that also kind of relate to the theme. Katie wrote a great letter to Georgetown Cupcake for our first War of 1812 open house to invoke the hostess and Dolly to give cupcakes
she
out.
She wanted,
to all of our
like
visitors.
Dolly offered the trendiest desserts of the time, to offer the trendiest DC dessert at our open house. So,
and we did get over 300 cupcakes for our first open house.
It's very exciting. I ate it. I won't say how many I ate, but it was a decent amount.
Yeah, so these are all kind of things that have been incorporated into each one of our open houses. Here's our first War of 1812 open house last August. There's our drawing lessons on the left. We had some historical musicians, David and Ginger Hildebrand, actually singing songs about Decatur and about the War of 1812. And then we had your make-your-own spyglass activity. There was an actual Decatur spyglass on exhibit, and we brought out some of that collection to show with visitors as well. Our next theme in February was History and Heritage Open House. This focused on African-American history in the White House neighborhood, and we were able to bring historians and descendants of some of those African-Americans who lived in the White House neighborhood to share their genealogy research, share the resources that they looked for, and some of them brought really big family trees and timelines to talk about the process that they went through to research their families. We also had other crafts and activities. We invoked Elizabeth Keckley and had some of the costumes from our Civil War program to talk about her and what she did, and also had sopranoist Vicki Jones reimagine some of the Fisk Jubilee Singers performances at the White House in the 1800s.
And also Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yes. We got Ben's Chili Bowl to donate chili for that open house. And just a few weeks ago, earlier in May, we had a diplomatic history open house. For those of you who may be in D.C. in May, that's a huge diplomatic history that Passport D.C. through the cultural tourism. A lot of the embassies have open houses at the beginning of May, so we decided to highlight the ambassadors, secretaries of state, and other people who lived at Decatur House, and also talk about the role of the president as chief diplomat. So Leslie put together an excellent exhibit that had White House China pieces that were borrowed. And then we also brought out some of the collections, documents, presidential appointments to other countries as ambassadors. And then we had some other crafts. And we had some coffee donated by Pete's to show true diplomat. Well, we're trying to go for tea.
Going for tea, but we got coffee, so got coffee. It worked.
Be flexible.
take what's offered.
So another way that we're going into trying to develop new audiences is to offer a variety of programs, which majority of what you're seeing with what Katie and Courtney do so well, it has focused more on education of students. Mm-hmm. We also like to educate adults as well. And so we started in 2013 and 14 an inaugural series called Piano in the White House. And this takes place in the second floor parlors of the Decatur House. And it was a four-part concert series that each concert itself was focused on a specific composer or a specific performance that happened in the White House. And so we had both people from the association, our fellow staff members, and also specific DC pianists who would describe why they were playing the pieces they were playing, describe the administration that this was associated with as well. And we had seen about 80 people, each one sold out very early on, so we were very happy with that. Again, people getting to enjoy the space of Decatur House, understanding more about what the National Center is, and also it's a revenue generator. We're a nonprofit. We do rely on funding from outside sources, so incorporating new and different kinds of public programming is a great way for us to also generate revenue, like I said. So Piano in the White House is one of the music series we do, and as Courtney mentioned, we also have done the Jazz on Jackson play series that was started by the National Trust, and we've continued it. And that's also a way for people to come and enjoy the President's Neighborhood. Part of our mission is the enjoyment of the White House and the White House neighborhood. So this is just an example of one of the partnerships also that we go into with public programs. Our most successful to date, I would think so, in terms of the real collaboration and the way that we were able to really reach out to the entire country. We partnered with
probably a lot of your sites here, too.
Yes. We visited 70 sites, 70 presidential and historic sites across the country with C-SPAN, filming, photographing, and researching. Had over 70 special guests, historians, friends of First Family members, former employees of the White House as well, featured on a weekly series that was 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live on C-SPAN. It was two seasons, and 35 episodes, because sometimes there wasn't a whole lot to cover about some First Ladies, so we had to combine a few in some of those different episodes. But essentially, it was great because we were able to draw a large community of scholarship, reach out to a lot of people, and also allow for live call-in questions and answers, really engaging people. I think our youngest caller was 7 years old, and our oldest caller was 87 years old, a little bit around there. It was one of those things where it really did engage a wide group of people. We also published a very special edition of our First Ladies of the United States of America book, which is a brief bio of each First Lady as well that went along with it. And the C-SPAN bus went on tour, so we went across the country. Some other examples of partnerships that we've been doing with public programming involved the White House Correspondents Association, who's celebrating their centennial this year. We did two lecture series with them, one being a panel of actual White House correspondents that are working today and discussing the history of actually being the press in the White House. We also had Bill Bichong, who's a Vice President of Research and New Media at the White House Historical Association, give a brief lecture prior to that on the history of the House and the structure itself and where the press has been located. Everyone really enjoyed the fact that the press secretary's office was temporarily in a bathroom. So it was a way to really expose the history of the White House as a structure and also the press association as well.
Okay.
I grew up in Tornado Alley, so I'm ducking for cover. Where's the nearest?
Glad you're here to direct us. Yes. Okay. Well, it's good to know it works.
We also partnered beginning in 1991 with the United States Capitol Historical Society and the United States Supreme Court Historical Society to do annual lectures that are called National Heritage Lectures. And that was a way for each of us to really highlight our branches of government. And this, of course, being prior to us having the National Center, we had to host it elsewhere. But when we have our turn next, which is coming up in 2015, we'll be able to host it at the National Center. National Archives and Records Administration, lectures again. We did one recently on White House photographers, featuring four former presidential photographers. And also we did a commemorative lecture panel, which you can see the middle picture there, which was about the Pablo Casals concert in the Kennedy administration. So again, we're looking at broad themes here. And importantly, the Kennedy generation of having public performances, or at least I'm trying to think of the word, cultural performances at the White House, and how they really succeeded with that. I had to write a couple other ones down because I have brainstorming this morning.
Well, in addition to the partnership with the Heritage Lecture, we also partner with the Capitol Historical, Supreme Court Historical, National Archives, and the DC Trolley Company for an eighth grade DC field trip, where the trolley companies go to the middle schools, pick up the eighth grade class, and takes them to each of the three branches of government, teaching them about the Constitution. It's called the We the People Trolley Tour, and it ends at the archives where they can see the actual Constitution. So it's another partnership that we've been doing for the last 7 to 8 years.
We also are members of various regional consortiums, one being the Historic House Museum Consortium. We're not a Historic House Museum ourselves, the association, but technically the White House is. So understanding what's going on around the area and how people are promoting and educating the public about them. Also, right now, particularly the Star Spangled Summer Consortium. And this is a series of local DC, Virginia, and Maryland historic sites, museums, and historical institutions that are trying to promote the bicentennial of the White House being burned on August 24th, 1814. It's a question I actually wanted to ask. Is anyone not familiar with the War of 1812 here? Because when I first started this project, I didn't really know that much about it, which is embarrassing. So that's one of the real reasons why we're pushing so hard for this with the War of 1812 education. It's because I think majority of Americans don't know the White House was ever burned down. So we actually had, getting to the s'mores, Bob, we had a press preview event, which was really successful and got us featured in a series of newspapers and magazines across the country. And instead of being able to reenact a burning, we handed everyone a s'mores kit and said, take it home and you can burn it yourself. So that worked out well. So we're doing various programs throughout the summer to both educate people and entertain them on White House history, and also we're helping promote those other sites that are much smaller that don't have as big a footprint that we do. Also, the Neighbors to the President, which is a variety of institutions that are in the presidential neighborhood helping promote their programs, and they help promote ours as well. And then one of our great scholarship programs is with Iowa State University, and just this year we're partnering with the White House Correspondents Association with that as well. Why Iowa State University? Hugh Seide is a former president of the White House Correspondents Association. He covers various presidential administrations, and was very beloved by also a lot of presidents because he was a very nonpartisan reporter. He was also the executive editor for Time magazine for quite some time. When he passed away, he's also very involved with the Historical Association. When he passed away, we established with David Rubenstein a scholarship program that is about being and covering the White House through the press. And so Iowa State University journalism majors are able to submit an essay every year. They win a scholarship, which helps with their school funding. And we also bring them to Washington, D.C., take them to the press room, take them to the National Press Club, take them to C-SPAN, to NBC to watch Meet the Press. So they really get a real sense of what it actually means to fully cover the White House and the presidency. And the White House Correspondents Association is partnering with us. Beginning next year, they'll be going to Iowa State every year for the First Amendment Day, and they'll be announcing who the winner is and discussing with all of the students what it means to actually cover the presidency.
Which was his alma mater.
Yes,
that's his alma mater.
So through these partnerships, we found ways to reach new audiences and tackle new topics, which I'm sure you've found at your own sites is a great way to kind of bring in new people, reach out to people who may not have known about you beforehand, and offer some new and exciting programs. So it's something we're really excited about, to have the space to make these partnerships and also offer a place to host these sort of things.
And again, they promote us, we promote them. So it spreads all of our identities. And then last but certainly not least is the National Park Service, who we've been actively involved with for quite some time and have always been a part of our mission as well. In 1995, we opened the White House Visitor Center in Baldrige Hall, which is just across the street from the White House in the Commerce Building. Now, initially, the White House Visitor Center was opened to be a place where you pick up your time tickets. You walk in, you say you want to go see the White House. Well, here, at 2:15, you can go in and tour. That doesn't happen anymore. So, with that process having changed after September 11th, that actual space didn't really fulfill what we needed it to really bring the White House out to everyone. So beginning in 2009, we have been through a very long process of redesigning and redeveloping that exact same space to actually be an exhibit, a permanent exhibit and temporary exhibits that give you a better sense of what the White House is if you're not fortunate enough to go in. It's not a supplement to a White House tour. It's not supposed to do anything to detour from the specialness of the place itself, but it's just helpful, essentially. And then also we'll be helping them celebrate their centennial in 2016.
And you have a slide for that, too.
Yeah. And this is the imagined parts of the White House Visitor Center. So it's in a very historic space. Again, Baldrige Hall is in the Commerce Building, and it's located right here. And here's the White House. And we are located right here. So we really cover a lot of the perimeter of the president's neighborhood as well. But you can see here there'll be, it's really not that easy to see, so I apologize, but there's a large to-scale model of the White House that's going to be central. There's also a lot of tactile elements. We've put a lot of emphasis and time and research into making this the most accessible visitor center that you can actually go to, whether you have any issues with sight, with hearing, any sense impairments, we have it covered. So anyone of any background will be able to really enjoy and have an equal experience to anyone who has no impairments whatsoever. We also wanted to protect the interior space as well, because this was originally the Patent Office for the United States. So it's a beautiful structure, but this really does bring a much more interactive part into understanding and learning about the White House. And it's one of the things that we do struggle with as a challenge, which, of course, that's part of what this presentation is about, is challenges faced, defining for people and helping them understand the difference between what the National Center for White House History is, the White House Visitor Center, and the White House. It can be complicated, and we do understand that, and we work very diligently to communicate that in an effective way, never taking away the very special nature of what the White House actually is. It's the prism for all of American history, and we try and convey that as that's number one. The White House Visitor Center clearly provides a more interactive experience for everyone who'd like to come and see it. It's a partnership with the National Park Service, and they are actually the ones who operate it, but we help maintain and also develop the exhibits that go in. And the National Center is essentially truly research-based, and it's to be able to, was that me? It's to be able to provide more resources for people and expose them more to what the White House is in the historical context. And in terms of what we, I went to the CPC's talk yesterday, and they were very diligent about talking about that they are going to help people learn more about the presidency. Well, we are people that are here to teach more about the White House, and we are nonpartisan, we are equal, we are balanced, we are unbiased and neutral. So that's something that also helps us establish, you know, what our goal is to teach about the White House throughout history.
Okay. So part of reaching new audiences and becoming a national center is through some new social media endeavors. So I'll just quickly go through these because we do want to leave time at the end for questions. But we've had our Twitter account for several years, but we recently converted our Facebook page, which used to solely be about the White House ornament, into a page about White House history. So we have one of our historians doing these great On This Day in History pieces about White House history, looking at it again through those five themes we were talking about earlier and coming up with some great pieces that give a little more insight into anything from weddings to historic events that happened to presidents on these days to additions to the White House that happened over time. So it's been a really fun way to explore that history and make our Facebook page a little bit more about us. Also, we've expanded into Instagram as well. This has been kind of a fun way to mesh our two interests, White House history, but then also things that are happening at the National Center. So we're posting historical images and also taking some photos of things that are happening. Our open houses, you can see the s'mores kids right there. A little highlighting of the ornament here and there as well. Then over on our Facebook page, we're doing some fun new things as well. And if, by the way, you want to go ahead, break out the cell phones and follow us on Twitter right now, that's totally fine by me. But we're doing more live tweeting of events, bringing things that are happening at our sites to a wider audience. And this year we actually participated in Big Block of Cheese Day. Is anyone familiar with Big Block of Cheese Day from the West Wing? It's a big speech by a character, basically talking about the time when Andrew Jackson had a huge block of cheese delivered to him. It sat in the White House for 2 years, really stinking up the place. And then he, you know, in order to get rid of it, he opened the White House for anyone to come on in, take a piece of cheese, talk with the president. So it's the spirit of opening. For the White House this year, it's the spirit of opening up the White House to questions. They had staffers on hand to ask political questions. It was a big social media day. But they asked us to be on hand for any historical questions that came up at the White House, because that's what we're most prepared to answer. And we also shared some fun facts about the big block of cheese, some of our resources on our website. Artist Peter Waddell created this great sort of picture of the aftermath of what the White House looked like after that cheese was eaten. So it's kind of a fun way for us to participate and reach new audiences. You know, we all wear many hats at our site, as I'm sure you do too, but one of the fun things I get to do is be the CTO, which is Chief Twitter Officer. So I've been having a lot of fun with that.
So as I mentioned before, we do have some online resources as well. This is something that we're hoping to expand and update. There are some challenges with managing so much content, so many themes. So this is what our website looks like as of when I left DC last week. We do have resources about our museum shop where you can find those ornaments and publications. You also have history, which it does break history into thematic, a lot of thematic content. And then the classroom section, which I'll highlight in a second, and then you can also learn more about our publications in the publications section. We'll get to our new president in a little bit. Here's an example of some of the themes that you can get to from our history section. So if you're interested specifically in Lincoln's White House, we did that as part of the Civil War, all of the commemorations there. We also have a general White House at War, architecture, fine and decorative arts. There's a lot about art on our website. We have a lot of resources for that. First Ladies was brought on as part of our C-SPAN series. We did create a page as a resource for that series as it was going on C-SPAN. So it's just an example of some of the themes that you'll find and resources that you'll find that may have some connections to your sites as well. Our classroom section needs some work, but we do have some lesson plans. A lot of them have been up there for a long time. We just don't have the staff and the resources to keep it fresh and updated. But we do have lessons, some lessons at the bottom with primary documents, and then the field trip program and in-school program. This is a place where teachers can request our school programs as well as evaluate. So they can do that right on our website. And anytime they fill out one of our online forms, it gets emailed to us and also sent to a spreadsheet so we can keep track of all of the responses that we've gotten through our website. Here is our White House art collection. This is something that was just put together within the last 3 or 4 years. This is an undertaking of ours to try to digitize the White House art collection. It started with 200 artworks, and it's now, I guess it says there, over 300, so we've added a little bit. But what's interesting about this, it's a little archaic, but it does allow people to search through. If we go to the next slide, you can search by title of the artwork, if you know an artist that you're looking for, the type of photo, if it's a landscape versus a portrait, and then you can also search by people. So I'm guaranteeing that all of your people are up on that list right now. If they're not, let me know. But you can see how many portraits of each president or first lady is in the collection as well as at least what's been digitized so far. But I think we have all the presidents on there.
So we'll go. Because there isn't.
I wonder why.
Because there isn't one.
It's a regular appointment. Some of Ellen Wilson, some of the drawings, I believe, are there.
And that's what's also spurred into with the National Center as well. I'm going to go over this quickly so we have time for Q&A, but is the development of a digital library of White House history. We were just awarded in 2014 a $250,000 grant from the Henry Luce Foundation, and by the end of November of 2014, we'll have 2,000 digital images of the White House art collection and architectural collection available online as sort of the jump-off point that will develop into a larger White House history database and online library. It'll be accessible to anyone that wants to use it. We hope to incorporate partnerships with this to bring objects, images of objects, from other sites on to this database as well, encouraging also site visitation for you. And essentially, yes, it will begin with just the art and architecture collections that we hold and that the White House Curator's Office holds. And these are just some examples which you will see relate to your bookmarks. examples of art that's in the White House, which again, the White House Historical Association is charged with protecting and also acquiring as well. And also, Bill Bishong from the White House Historical Association couldn't be here for this program, But he is the best resource to speak about this on a further in further context. So if you would like to get his contact information, please let me know and be happy to direct you to his email and phone.
Okay. So from you, thinking about this digital library, is there anything that you'd like to see or expect to see from the digital library of White House history? Yes.
The libraries in the White House, in terms of the collections of books?
In terms of the collections of books?
Not that I'm aware of, in terms of the specific parts of that that will...
That could be an interesting thing to put forward.
Definitely.
We do not, at this moment, actually, which is one of the things that...
In terms of the collections of books?
Not that I'm aware of, in terms of the specific parts of that that will...
That could be an interesting thing to put forward.
Definitely.
We do not, at this moment, actually, which is one of the things that has been developed, actually, by Google Art. They've done 360 views of the public rooms, which is the only thing you're ever going to see anyways, but those are available through the Google Art project.
We have a really old online tour of the White House. But
we probably would develop one that's our own. Because it's only a 360 view from Google Art, we'd likely probably take a more, a broader approach so that you'd actually see how it's like to walk through the room.
And historical connections to historical photographs of those rooms as well. There are a lot of things in the works, you know, as we go forward with our web presence and things we want to do. There's a long laundry list of things like that, but that's definitely good to hear about as something that's wanted or interested in. Anything else?
Yeah, as a curator at the Golden Gate Library, although we have our own photo collection, we still get questions that about the belongings of the White House, what was hanging during the Johnson administration, how the walls were or whatever. And we can't answer those questions. So it would be nice to see or have access to the different administrations and what their White House looked like. So not only for researchers, for our own records, we can pinpoint, okay, we got this picture, it was in this room at this time, which is something our records are right now lacking.
Absolutely. And we've started with the Oval Offices is a great example of how that's changed over time and how each administration is decorated and changed. But I think that, that there's certain opportunities to expand that beyond that room.
Definitely.
Going room by room of the Blue Room and Jackson administration, how it's changed over time.
There's so much you could do with that. Great. Well, thank you. Well, we'll quickly just hop over to what's new at the White House Historical Association. Some pretty big news recently.
So we do have a lot of plans for the future, and we would very much like to implement all of them, but there are challenges that we... that we face in terms of making those plans to begin with, and also with the welcoming of a new president, which we're very excited about. He starts on Monday, so we have lots to go back to and to work on. Stuart McLaurin comes from American Village in Alabama, and he is formerly from with Mount Vernon, also did quite a bit with the Reagan Centennial Commission. We're very excited to have him on board. He's got fresh ideas, a lot of energy, so we're hoping that what we have planned and what he has in mind, we can merge those two together, and will take us into, well, essentially, we're already in the 21st century, but even further into the 21st century.
keeping current.
Yeah, so we're also planning to do other things to expand our audience. Obviously, we want more partnerships, and we want more opportunities to, you know, put more information on our website, to stream some of the programs that we have, and actually do, I know the other session's distance learning, but that's something else that we've been exploring as well. which I couldn't go to that one, so I'm here right now. It's fine. So we do have a lot of exciting things ahead and interesting challenges, as I think we've talked about before. Staffing, Katie and I are the only two full-time educators on staff, and we do have a staff of part-time people, but really developing and moving forward and being a national center for a national audience is something that we need to think about and do a little bit more. So hopefully by the next Presidential Sites and Libraries Conference, we'll have seen that expansion.
And we want to collaborate. We want to keep collaborating. We want to build partnerships with all of you, whether it's a web presence or if it's a lecture that we have at our National Center, a lecture that you have. We want to be a partner with your institution because the president that you are charged with interpreting and protecting their history, we also are in charge of protecting the White House that they once lived in and made all those great decisions in. So we do want to continue that, and we encourage you to be in touch with us, and we will do everything we can to fulfill those partnerships. Yes. It's to promote the understanding, enjoyment of the White House, essentially in a nutshell, but we broadened that recently into being also the president's neighborhood. And that goes through our publications and our educational materials and programming. It was a very broad mission statement that was founded in 1961, and we're building upon it as we grow in ideas and also in as an association itself.
Click to the last one. So we'll go ahead, and if you have any new ideas on how you can better incorporate the history of the White House in your site or new ideas of how you could do that, if you want to write them on that card, you can. Also, if you'd like to share your contact information with us either on that card or hand us a business card, we're definitely interested in staying in touch. And as you go ahead and do this, we'll also go ahead and open it up to questions because I know we want to make sure we end before lunch.
Yes,
that's very important. So any questions, thoughts?
Yes.
Under 30 full-time employees.
Around 25, 30. Mm-hmm. And what is its annual budget, and where does it get its money? Was it publicly, and is it funded by the federal government, to some extent, or not?
The annual budget I can't speak to specifically, but we do receive our operating income from the sale of promotional material, from our publications, from the ornament. That's essentially how we generate our income. So it's on the sale of educational and educational. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And on the other hand, with taking over Decatur House, not only do we manage it, but any events, weddings, we do a lot of private events there as well, mm-hmm. and that also generates income.
We're not federally funded at all.
I think that's one of the problems we all have, is people think we're federally
funded. Right.
That's to some extent, some of the presidential libraries are, but there's this perception in the public that all sites like this get funding.
We know.
We need to work on that perception.
We're actually gearing
we
up
go
to
schools
hire.
And students think the president's coming.
Yeah.
Historical association.
Yeah. We're actually gearing up to bring on a development person for the first time on our staff. So that will likely help us as well.
Yeah. Anything else? Yes. For open houses. We are planning to open guided tours again. And actually, as part of the Star Spangled Summer, we're hoping to do War of 1812 themed tours on Stephen Decatur. That'll be probably 2 days a week for the summer, just as a test. And then hopefully that can be expanded to a lot more often.
So the open houses were kind of like our first foray back into having public programming again. The house was closed for a long time just because of all the preservation and renovation efforts. And so it was on our minds as we were getting to that point, okay, we're ready. How can we do this in a controlled fashion that doesn't completely overwhelm our staff? So these open houses that really gave us kind of a celebration, something to make a big deal about, were a great way to reintroduce ourselves to the public. And we've had great conversations with people who've missed Decatur House and have kind of helped us light the fire to get tours happening on a more regular basis in the future. Sure.
And in that context, Decatur House used to actually be a historic house museum when it was owned by or operated by the National Trust.
And it's still printed in guidebooks that they can show up Monday through Friday. And
that's definitely one of our challenges, just communicating this new new mission and project of ours.
Yeah. Anything else? And we also haven't had a PR marketing person in over a year. Maria Downs, who we just heard from, the Ford
Social Secretary.
Was our PR marketing person until last February. And
So as I'm sure it's a constant staffing, different needs are always things that are coming up, but we're very excited with what we've been able to do and the new things are starting at the National Center, and I think the future is going to be it's going to be exciting. So I guess we won't, we'll make sure you guys can get back over in time for 12:30. Feel free to stick around and ask us questions.
And we have business cards up here as well.
Take a bookmark or two, and thank you so much for coming.